Hello, Blank Green Canvas listeners. Do you enjoy this podcast? If so, please consider becoming a supporter on Anchor. You can support this podcast with a small monthly donation to help sustain future episodes. Monthly contributions range from 99 cents a month to $4.99 a month and $9.99 a month. Visit anchor.fm/blank-green-canvas and click Support This Podcast to become a monthly contributor. Hello, everyone. This is Noah Villaverde, host of the Blank Green Canvas podcast. And this week, my guest is me. Yes, you heard that right. I am going to be interviewing myself. Actually, no, I'm not going to be interviewing myself, but this week's episode is a bit of a change of plans from what I originally intended. I originally intended this podcast episode to be about Yesterday, the Beatles, and the filmography of Danny Boyle, but I couldn't get a guest for that podcast this week. So instead, a few days ago, I posted a photo on my Facebook and my Instagram and Twitter asking basically an AMA. The same thing you see on people who do Reddit AMAs, I basically did the same thing. Posted a photo on there, basically asking all my friends, family, and followers of the podcast to send me questions, just asking me anything that they'd like to ask. And in that case, I just wanted to say to all those who submitted, and I gotten about a couple dozen questions as a result, I just wanted to say thank you to those who submitted, but also I just wanted to say a thank you to everybody who has listened and supported the podcast ever since I started it with the Game of Thrones series finale spoiler discussion with my friends back in May. I can't stress enough how thankful I am for all the support I have received. The love I've received from friends and family as well for starting this. I still can't believe I've been able to do this on a weekly basis so far this summer. Just discussing my passion for film, TV, music, just arts and entertainment in general with friends of mine is just an incredible opportunity, and I love doing it. I just love doing it. I can't wait to keep doing some more for the rest of the summer at least, and discussing more to come, you know. I also want to give a special shout out to my friends Jorge Rodriguez and Alan Gunn, who have both been the only guests that have appeared on more than one episode. Both of them have appeared on two episodes each, so I wanted to give them a special thank you. They will definitely be appearing in more episodes in the future, hopefully, as well as other new guests, as well as other old guests that came on in previous podcasts. So with that in mind, once again, thank you so much for all the support, and thank you to those who listened to the Toy Story 4 podcast as well. That one was fun. That went on for 2 hours and 10 minutes. I still can't believe me, Skylar, and Alan talked about that movie, or all four of those movies, for as long as we did. But hey, that's what happens when you get passionate. So I'm going to be starting off with the questions I received on Facebook. I got a couple questions from here. So through that, I'm going to start off with a question from Michael Vu. Michael Vu is actually an old school friend of mine. Knew each other from elementary school. We graduated high school together. How you doing, Michael? Hope you're doing well. He asks, are you still pursuing your career in the movie business, or have you decided that the podcast is the way to go now? Okay, Michael. So here's the thing. I'm currently trying to explore all the options I have, because for the last few years, I used to convince myself that you have to choose one thing and capitalize on that one thing, exercise that skill very well, try to get a job through it, yada, 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 you know, the whole American dream kind of thing. And through that, I explored a lot of options. For many of you who may have known me personally, you may have known that I've always had a passion for films and TV shows and writing and filmmaking in particular, with a bit of a love for music as well. I have a background in playing music in the past. I was a saxophonist, still am to a certain extent. Played it in the marching band in high school, a 3-time state champion in the marching band, and I'm so proud of that. And I also sing here and there. I'm a part of a worship team at my local church, so I enjoy that. But movies have always been a part of my life, because ever since I was a little kid, I always felt like I was a really shy kid, for one. Didn't have a lot of friends, But movies were kind of a way for me to escape from the shyness I had, and gave me, in a way, friends through fictional characters and stories that enthralled me. And I always wanted to make films or be involved in them in some way. So I was exploring a lot of options and everything else. And for the last few years, actually, I've been focusing more on writing. Took a long hiatus from videos that I used to do on my old channel when it used to be called Green Arc Reviews, which I have since rebranded into the Blank Green Canvas now. Through that, so you ask me, do I still want to pursue a career in the movie business, or I've decided the podcast is the way to go now? Well, here's the thing. The podcast is just something for me to start off with because I just wanted to get something out there. Because I often find myself in social gatherings with like friends or like-minded or similarly aged college students like me who are typically creative in their fields. And how often do you find yourself at a party and you talk about what ideas you have with the people you meet and how you really want to get them done? And then you go to another party maybe a couple months or even a year later and they ask you, oh, how is that project you've been working on doing? And you're like, oh, I got busy. Well, that was me for the last few years. And it's not that I got busy. It was that I was scared to pursue something and felt lazy to a certain extent. And I wanted to change that this summer. You know, I wanted to explore producing content again of my own. And to start off, I had a really good microphone right here. It's a Blue Yeti microphone, and I wanted to use it for a podcast that I would do because I just love film and TV. I love talking about film and TV and music to a certain extent, and I just wanted to get that going. Here's the funny thing though, Michael, or anybody listening really, but I say Michael because he asked the question. Podcasting, those who succeed in podcasting, like actually make a living out of it, the only ones that I could think of are people maybe like Joe Rogan, who I listen to a lot, or there are a few other podcasts out there. But Joe Rogan is also a stand-up comedian and does a few other gigs, you know, with MMA, so he's already a multimillionaire on his own right, but I bring him up because he's perhaps probably one of, if not the most popular podcast in the world, maybe. So, that's probably the only way to really make a true living off of podcasting or perhaps radio, you know. But I must say, though, that I still want to be involved in entertainment in any way I can, whether it is behind the scenes, like working on films or TV shows. I recently helped out friends of mine on a short film. I did the audio for that with like the boom mic operator or whatever, and that was a great time. That was an all-day shoot almost. I actually had to go to my job later after that shift. I had a shift after that shoot, and that it was hot. I wore jeans, I wore a black shirt. That was the wrong decision, to say the least, because we were out like in the sandy area. But it was a fun shoot. I love being on set, and I also made a short film earlier in the spring semester with two actors and my friend Jason, who's an incredible cinematographer. Eventually I will release that short film, and I'm looking forward to more projects in the future. The thing is that I'm just trying to explore every option I can, and whether it is through podcasting or through making films or TV shows, maybe even music or all of the above, like I like being in front of and behind the camera. I'm a natural performer. It's been a part of me ever since I was a little kid. So at the moment I'm embracing uncertainty in what I want to do career-wise, but you know, the podcast is definitely something I like doing, and if I were to make a living out of it, that'd be great. And if you actually want to help support the podcast, you could actually become a supporter on Anchor, which is what I use to distribute my podcast. You could actually become a monthly donor from 99 cents a month to $4.99 a month, or if you're generous, $9.99 a month. That way, you could help sustain the podcast and help me, you know, provide, you know, some nice income to continue it from, you know, just to help me out, you know, because I'm still a college student and I could still use any income that I could get. But even if I wasn't receiving any income, I enjoy doing this. I love talking about, you know, pop culture. It's my passion, and I can't wait to talk about it even more in the near future. So there's a long-winded answer to that. By the way, guys, I tend to ramble a lot when it comes to these things, as you may have guessed if you've listened to previous episodes, especially last week's Toy Story episode. But so there's that. So I apologize if that annoys you. Actually, I shouldn't apologize. That's just who I am. So next question comes from Sandor Scroggins. And he asks, what's your opinion on the future of DC films? Okay, so everyone knows that Marvel Studios has kind of been the top dog, not just in comic book movie, the comic book movie genre or the renaissance that we're in, but also, you know, just in franchises right now. I mean, how much money did Avengers Endgame make? How much money did all these movies make? I still get blown away looking at the numbers that Black Panther did last year. Although Avengers Infinity War made more money worldwide, Black Panther was just a cultural phenomenon, especially here in the United States. It was the highest grossing film domestically in the United States, even beating out Avengers Infinity War, which is kind of incredible once you factor in the fact that it's a standalone movie, but then you can't deny the cultural impact it was, you know, with a predominantly black cast. Its cultural significance is just powerful, on top of just being a great movie. I love that film. And, I bring this up because DC has had a rocky road when it comes to its shared universe. I mean, we often forget, obviously, we had the Dark Knight trilogy, you know, a couple years back, which I love all of those films. The Dark Knight is actually the film that kind of helped inspire me to look more into films beyond blockbusters. I mean, sure, it was a blockbuster, but it was more so a crime genre, a crime drama that happened to have Batman in it. I love that film. It's one of my favorite films of all time. Top five, maybe. That movie means so much to me. And it was partially because of my love for comic books and those stories and everything else along with that. But DC, ever since Man of Steel, which I'm actually a big fan of, Zack Snyder's Man of Steel, released in 2013, I'm a big defender of that film. But they tried to build a cinematic universe. They did that with Batman v Superman, which is a film that I have a complicated relationship with, to say the least. There are elements of that film that I think are actually kind of incredible, but there are also elements of that film that I just fundamentally do not agree with when it comes to the way they interpret those heroes. So I have a lot of issues with that film. Suicide Squad, don't get me started. Oh, man, Suicide Squad, one of the most disappointing movies, I'd say, of the decade. I was so excited for that film. That trailer with Bohemian Rhapsody just was incredible, one of the best trailers maybe of the decade. And it turned out to be kind of a piece of crap, honestly. And then a Wonder Woman came out, which I loved. I loved Wonder Woman. Patty Jenkins directed the hell out of that film. Gal Gadot was perfect in that role. And I just found that movie delightful, inspiring, you know. And it's important, obviously, with like how it showcased as a statement for like strong women in film, in blockbusters, and female superheroes kicking it all off. I mean, female superhero movies existed beforehand, but Wonder Woman really helped bring that up to a new level and popularize it yet again. You know, we had Captain Marvel recently and another slew of female-led films as a result. So I love that film, Justice League. It's funny, Justice League gets a lot of hate. I don't think it's a horrible movie. I think it's a mediocre movie. It has moments where I think the tone is really weird. I think the movie's tone is weird because it tries to be very Saturday morning cartoon in a lot of ways, but it also still has the stench of what Batman v Superman left on all of us. So it tried to please everybody, ended up pleasing no one. There are elements of that film that I think are redeemable. It brought us the kind of Superman that I think is right. And I like the team dynamic. It's just that movie is just so mediocre, nothing special about it. You could tell that Warner Brothers was trying to please everybody but ended up pleasing no one, which has since led to the annoying hashtag release the Snyder Cut thing from certain elements of the DC fandom, which makes me feel annoyed a bit because I'm a DC fan and they're making me look bad as a result. Not all people, obviously, but, you know, it gets annoying. But, you know, there's Justice League. And then, obviously, Aquaman, which got good reviews, and I know some people weren't too into Aquaman. I actually dug it. I thought James Wan did a really good job adding his own sensibilities, directing that film. In a lot of ways, it reminded me of like the early 2000s, when it wasn't all about cinematic universes and focusing on one character in that story, and the director had his own vision, you know. And I thought the movie just looked visually stunning. There's this scene that's a lot of it is in one shot, and it's this chase sequence in which Arthur Curry, played by Jason Momoa, you know, Aquaman, Amber Heard's Mira, and Yahya Abdul-Mateen, who plays Black Manta. There's this chase sequence in there, and it's incredible. One of the most visually stunning superhero action sequences in recent memory. I'm a big fan of Aquaman, and Shazam. Shazam might be my favorite DC extended universe film, and it got great reviews. Zachary Levi was perfect in that role. The kid actors in that film were just all across the board terrific. And it did well. The movie did really well. I wish the movie just wasn't sandwiched between Captain Marvel and Avengers Endgame, because it deserved to be a much bigger hit than it ended up being. I mean, it's going to get a sequel. We're going to get a Black Adam movie starring Dwayne Johnson, but that movie deserved to be a much, much bigger hit. You know, it's a success, definitely, but that movie is so sweet. It is, like, so earnest. It screams the kind of tone that DC really should have embraced right from the beginning. It reminds me a little bit of elements of, like, Richard Donner's Superman mixed in with, like, an Amblin adventure film of coming of age. It's such a delight. It's actually still one of my favorite movies of the year. If you count out Avengers Endgame, it's probably my favorite superhero movie of the year. I even like Shazam more than a lot of Marvel Studios movies in general, you know, because I think Shazam just, it's a good movie on its own. It doesn't have to, sure, there's references to the rest of the DC universe, but it's its own story. It's sweet, it's heartfelt, it's hilarious. Man, I can't recommend it enough. I believe the movie might be out digitally already. It's going to come out on Blu-ray very soon. And if you haven't gotten a chance to check out Shazam in theaters, unfortunately, which was a pity because I got to see it 2 weeks early before it came out, and it was a sold-out crowd. And everybody loved it. Everybody was laughing, having a good time. It was such a sweet, great film. Definitely something I recommend to everyone. It's a movie for everyone, honestly. It's such a delight. I must say that, like, DC, I'm actually pretty optimistic with the future of DC, because with Marvel, a post-Endgame, or really post-Far From Home world, I'm curious to see where they go. You know, it looks like they have a slate, you know? Like, we have, like, Shang-Chi coming out, a Black Widow movie. Shang-Chi I'm obviously very excited about. But, DC excites me because it looks like they're abandoning the shared universe thing, just focusing on making movies that are just good on their own, letting the directors really shine, because as much as I love Marvel, that's Kevin Feige almost all the way. I mean, some directors get a chance to have their voice thrown in there, like James Gunn or Taika Waititi, or to a certain extent Ryan Coogler, but you could tell Feige has his fingerprints on basically all of these films. And as much as I really enjoy almost all of them, they kind of feel very similar, which I guess makes sense since the MCU is basically like a television series, but on the big screen. But in the case for DC, obviously, like, I'm very optimistic. Joker comes out later this year, which I cannot wait to see. Joaquin Phoenix is going to kill that role. We also have Birds of Prey, which is a Harley Quinn movie with a few other female DC villains, which is apparently really good from test screening reports. Also next year, what else comes out next year from DC? I forget. I know Birds of Prey comes out next year. Wonder Woman 1984 obviously comes out next year. Can't wait for that. Loved the first one. I'm excited to see Kristen Wiig as Cheetah. I'm curious to see how Chris Pine factors into the story again, you know, and other future ones. I mean, obviously you have James Gunn's Suicide Squad movie, which is going to be crazy. And obviously you have Matt Reeves as the Batman starring Robert Pattinson. And to those who hate the casting of Robert Pattinson, I must say, you probably have only seen Twilight, or better yet, you probably never even seen Twilight. You just joined the bandwagon hate train of Twilight because everybody hates it. And just think, oh, he's just a sparkly vampire. He's not going to be good. He's not a good actor. Well, you probably haven't seen Good Time. You probably haven't seen The Lost City of Z or The Rover, or a lot of other great independent films that Robert Pattinson has appeared in, where he showcased his range as an actor, and all he needs to do is just pack on some muscle, and he's Batman, honestly. He's gonna be a great Batman. Christopher Nolan already cast him in his newest film, Tenet, alongside John David Washington and Elizabeth Debicki, among other impressive actors and actresses in that cast. If Christopher Nolan, who has made a Batman trilogy, likes you. I'm pretty sure Warner Brothers and Matt Reeves made the right decision casting Robert Pattinson. So with DC, I am actually really excited to see where they go. I am optimistic with their path, and I'm rooting for them. Because I'll be honest, I think there's a big bandwagon in terms of DC hate, or like, you know, just dogpiling on DC. It's a bandwagon, I'll be honest with you. I'm not saying that as some sort of butthurt DC fanboy, because I love both Marvel and DC equally, you know. Marvel has my favorite superhero, Spider-Man, but Batman and Superman and a lot of the other members of the Justice League and DC Comics are not too far behind, you know. So I'm excited, I'm rooting for DC, and I think they're headed down an interesting and unique path that's going to be different from Marvel and will make really exciting films as a result. Sorry if you hear the AC in the background or any other sounds in the background. You know, it's summertime, it's July, and I'm from Fresno and it's really hot, so there's that. So here's another question that I received. Here's one from Alan Gunn, frequent guest on the podcast, appeared on Godzilla podcast and Toy Story. Shout out to you, Alan. First question is, how long before you realize I'm your looper and one of us is gonna have to kill the other? Okay, this is actually a little inside joke between Alan and I. We pretend that we're basically twins, or like each other. Like, I'm Tyler Durden and he's Edward Norton from Fight Club, or vice versa. So we've met up a few times. We actually met online first, and then we developed a friendship through there, through a Facebook group that we were on together. And we basically talk every day as a result now. We're buddies. So it's a common joke between us and our mutual friends that we're the same person. But yeah, you're my looper, but yeah, I'm going to kill you, Alan. Yeah, just kidding, buddy. Love you. Second question he asks me was, what's been the biggest surprise / learning moment in your time as a podcaster so far? And what advice would you give to those looking to get started in podcasting? Okay, so I'm still very much a novice when it comes to podcasting. As you could tell, I use Anchor, which is the easiest way to start a podcast, as you heard in sponsors. But also, with podcasting, what I find surprising is that you really, especially if you have a guest with you, you really need to know how to set time properly, because you want to make sure you get things done concisely, and you want to make sure that your guest has enough to talk about as well. That's something that I'm still learning. I like to dominate the conversation a lot, especially if it's something like Toy Story, for example, that I know a little too much about. So I tend to go on tangents and tend to dominate the conversation. So that's something that I want to work on. Let the guest do most of the talking, because in a lot of ways, they're the ones that should be showcased the most, even though I'm the host of the podcast. So besides learning how to be more concise and letting the guest speak more and trying to let them be the center of it, other stuff I've learned is sound is important, and you need to have a solid microphone. Thankfully, this Blue Yeti microphone I have, which cost around $100-$120, I believe, when I bought it a couple years back. It has quality sound, it has a different sound setting. So when I used it for the Game of Thrones podcast, there were four of us. I used a different setting that allowed the four of us to have equal sound on the mic. But as a result, it was very echoey, because that's not the most ideal way to use it to record. So I'm using the isolated mode in which it's focusing in my direction. So when I record it, it's just me and it's so isolated. So there's that. But then you really need to just know what you're passionate about. And if you could talk about what you're passionate about for as long as you can, or if you could hold a good conversation on anything, then you could really start a podcast very well. Like I said, I bring up Joe Rogan because he brings in many guests almost every day, and they're varying different kinds of guests. Like, he brings people who are athletic, you know, artists, you know, people who are involved in politics or commentary and all that stuff, you know, his MMA background. He runs the gamut when it comes to the conversations he has. And if you're good, or you just enjoy good conversation, then podcasts are definitely for you. I definitely recommend, if you want to start it, Anchor is a good place to start. But also, you just need a mic. You can't use anything too cheap. You can't use like the mic on your laptop. Definitely not. Try to find something, like find like just a simple USB microphone to start off. You know, I mean, there's other very high-end microphones like Shure, which is used on many expensive podcasts that are very popular. I'd like to get there at some point with multiple Shure mics, but that's gonna cost a pretty penny. So I'm just gonna use this Blue Yeti for the time being, you know, but just find your niche. Here's the thing, find your niche when it comes to starting a podcast, what you're passionate about, focus on that, and just find a good microphone that will make sure your voice sounds well, and just bring in friends or guests that are willing to help out. And also, you have to be regular when it comes to when you release things, preferably weekly, because that's what a lot of big podcasts that are out there, they typically do it weekly. A podcast that I used to listen to, Serial, I've only listened to the first season, haven't been fond of like the later seasons, but the first season was released on a weekly basis, and I got so excited whenever a new episode was released, because there were so many things that that got me engaged. Sarah Koenig, who was the narrator of that podcast, just did a great job. She had a great voice, her storytelling is on point. So basically, just find your niche, have a good microphone, be consistent, build your audience. That's all I have when it comes to starting a podcast. So there's that. I've learned a lot, and I'm excited for more. And yeah. So next question on Facebook comes from my friend Matt Conway. How you doing, Matt? And he asks, what do you think of the rumor that Tom Holland will star in 3 Spider-Man trilogies? Okay, so that's an interesting rumor. Far From Home actually comes out this week, and as you can guess, Far From Home is going to be the subject of next week's episode, so stay tuned to that. I'm going to have my friend Armando be a part of that podcast with me, and I might have another guest on there to be determined. That's an interesting rumor. 3 Spider-Man trilogies, wow. So if you think about it, that's like 9 movies, really. That's kind of crazy. And it's kind of crazy to think that Tom Holland has starred in more movies as Spider-Man than both Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield have, you know? I don't know what to think about that rumor, but I must say there has been this viral thing going on in an interview while promoting Far From Home where Tom Holland, Zendaya, and Jacob Batalon, they were asked the question about whether or not, because of Into the Spider-Verse, which is an incredible animated film, if that element of like multiple dimensions was introduced to the MCU and to the Spider-Man canon, would Tom Holland be interested in starring alongside Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield in that kind of live-action Spider-Verse, and maybe throw in Miles Morales in there if you'd like? And I must say, if a live-action Spider-Verse starring Tom Holland but also starring Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield reprising their roles from those previous films they were in, if that were official, I think that would become the most anticipated movie of my lifetime. I'm not kidding. Because if you think about it, I mean, the Raimi's Spider-Man trilogy with Tobey Maguire, those movies mean a lot to me. And although, in a way, Spider-Man 3 did conclude it, they had plans for a 4th Spider-Man film that were canceled. And then obviously we had The Amazing Spider-Man and Amazing Spider-Man 2, movies that I have a lot of mixed feelings about. It's so funny, because of those 3 actors, Andrew Garfield might be the most impressive and most accomplished actor of the 3, but he's the Spider-Man I like the least. I like him in The Mask, but I don't like him as Peter. But we never got a proper conclusion to his story, because Sony had plans to expand his universe with different spin-offs like the Sinister Six, but that didn't go through, so that's kind of a bummer for Andrew Garfield, unfortunately. But if you were to make a live-action Spider-Verse with Tom Holland, Andrew Garfield, and Tobey Maguire, not only would that be my most anticipated movie of all time, but I think that movie would make billions. For one, you're playing into our nostalgia. For 2, it's Spider-Man. And 3, it's just an irresistible concept and a new way for Marvel and Sony to distinguish itself beyond, like, after an Avengers Endgame world. Because Avengers Endgame felt like the be-all, end-all, even though we know they're going to continue those stories. But I must say, that is a dream movie. I don't know if it will ever happen, but I think it's possible. I would love for that to happen, you know. So there is that when it comes to Spider-Man. And I'm just going to double check if I have any more. That's it when it comes to Facebook questions. So with that, I'm going to move on to Instagram questions. And as I open up my Instagram right here, let's take a look at some of the responses I got. And I'm going to answer a few questions from my friend Adam Rolseth. How you doing, Adam? He sent me a few questions, and a lot of them are really funny. First one is, Mrs. Incredible or Bo Peep? Oh, Adam. If you guys don't get it, Mrs. Incredible, Elastigirl, and Bo Peep, they're both Pixar characters, and they gained a lot of popularity on Twitter because they are dummy thick with two C's. And I can't lie, it's kind of crazy seeing those two characters on screen and how thick they are. I mean, we knew Mrs. Incredible was thick from the first film, but in the second film, it's like almost distracting. I mean, partially because of how great the animation got, but whoa. It's kind of funny. And then Toy Story 4, Bo Peep returns, and we see her without like the big gown that she has, so we see what's underneath. And oh, wow, Pixar, you have an interesting design, but if I had to choose, I mean, I don't know. I'd work out with both of them. I mean, they definitely are gym buddies, you know. I can't choose between Mrs. Incredible or Bo Peep. I guess Mrs. Incredible, because she's a real human, kind of, and Bo Peep's a toy, a porcelain doll. So there's that. Least favorite movie of all time. There are a lot of movies that I can't stand. One that's personal for me is The Last Airbender, which is a common one because I loved the animated series so much. And that live-action movie by M. Night Shyamalan is just garbage. All the way through, straight down the line garbage, from mispronouncing the names of the characters. Aang is Ung, Sokka, Soka, Uncle Iroh, Uncle Iroh, some dumb... That movie's so bad. It's poorly made, poorly acted, and it's such a lazy adaptation of the animated series that is kind of a masterpiece in its own right. Has issues with whitewashing of its cast. God, that movie's terrible. I absolutely hate that movie. But another movie that is probably maybe even worse is this animated film called Food Fight. And Food Fight, and that's with an exclamation point at the end. It has some of the worst animation you will ever see. It features a lot of voice actors that lost their relevance because they recorded their dialogue back in the early 2000s. The animation budget and everything else, the movie went to crap, basically. And then they finished it many years later, like in the early 2010s. And the result is one of the most ugly, terribly written, unfunny movies you'll ever see. Food Fight it's one of those movies you actually have to see to believe. It's basically like a supermarket, and they're trying to make their own version of Toy Story, whereas the supermarket closes, all the food comes to life. It's not like Sausage Party, that Seth Rogen R-rated animated movie. This one is definitely more kid-friendly, technically, although there are a lot of inappropriate, like, sex jokes. Like, there's this animated character, and she's like a dominatrix, and it's really awkward the way she comes alive and everything else. Like, there's a lot of sexual innuendos in Food Fight that are just kind of bizarre and insane. And that is definitely a movie you have to see to believe. So, The Last Airbender and Food Fight are definitely up there for some of my least favorite movies of all time. Another question from Adam is, what's the worst live-action adaptation of a property you grew up with? Well, I brought it up, Last Airbender. There's that. I'm not a big fan of... I actually like the first Transformers movie from Michael Bay. And I do like Bumblebee, that recent spinoff. But all those other Transformers sequels just get progressively worse. I skipped Transformers The Last Night. I just couldn't. I couldn't deal with it. I'm done. I can't watch those Michael Bay movies anymore of Transformers. Like, they just become an eyesore. They become noisy, pesky, and annoying. Sorry about that. So there's that. And to follow up with that, what property would you most like to adapt yourself? Okay, so if you were to give me a property for me to adapt, I'll be honest, this might be different than what Adam might be going for, but it's an adaptation, but it would also kind of be a remake in a way. growing up, I loved the book The Outsiders by S.E. Hinton. I read that in middle school. Love that book. And Francis Ford Coppola made a movie of that in the either 70s or 80s, I forget. But Ralph Macchio was in it. Yeah, 80s, definitely. Ralph Macchio, C. Thomas Howell, Tom Cruise was in it. That was his first movie role, in fact. I love that movie, too. There's elements of that movie that frustrate me, though, because I think they really should have done more with, like, I think there's some really bad music choices in that movie. I mean, I get it. It's trying to reflect the times. But there's some choices in the score where it really should have focused more on the level of drama that it reflects. So if I were to adapt The Outsiders today, I could think of a lot of different kinds of actors that would fit those roles. I mean, I love coming-of-age movies. I love that story. If I were given the keys to adapt whatever I'd like, I would love to adapt The Outsiders for today's audience, basically. So I guess that's where I'm at in terms of, like, adapting something. So, yeah. So thank you, Adam, for that question. And let's see other questions I received from Instagram. I got a few more here. So, my friend Ariel Fuertes. Love you, Ariel. How you doing? Hope you're doing well. First question she asks, thoughts on Asian representation in media and its rise / where you hope it leads? I love this question. And for those of you who only know me through my voice and haven't seen me visually, which is weird because you might see the artwork cover of each of the podcast episodes, I'm a Filipino-American, proud Pinoy. I was born and raised in the States, although both my parents are Filipino immigrants that met here in the States and ended up getting married and having their kids here. Asian representation, I didn't realize, meant more to me than I thought. Because as a kid, when I watched all these movies and TV shows, there weren't a lot of people that looked like me, but I didn't really think of it that much, you know, because I just, like, I watched Harry Potter, and I'm sure Harry Potter is a white kid from London, but I put the glasses on and I have the same hairstyle. I could look like him, kind of. You know, or I still identify with like Luke Skywalker or Peter Parker, just random examples of blockbuster characters that I love growing up. I identify with them even though they weren't the same race or ethnicity as I was. But when it came to other characters like that were Asian American, I think of like Short Round or the same actor who, as we see in The Goonies, there weren't a lot of Asian kids or Asian guys like me. Sure, there was Rufio in Hook, Filipino, Dante Basco, also voice of Zuko in Avatar The Last Airbender. Shout out. But I didn't realize how important Asian representation really meant to me until I actually looked into how there really aren't a lot of Asian Americans in cinema or television as a result of the industry just giving Asian Americans just not the best kind of roles. Worst case scenario, they make Asian guys either just martial arts people, which, I mean, awesome. I mean, I grew up watching martial arts movies and we're great at that. But if it weren't for that, they also give us the worst kind of roles. They make Asian guys unsexy. Think of movies like Breakfast at Tiffany's, in which Mickey Rooney, that's a perfect example of yellow face, or you have 16 Candles, the character's literally named Long Duck Dong. Come on. I mean, it's funny, but come on. Like, you definitely do us no favors, you know? And growing up, like, middle school and high school, when I watched all these movies, whether they were from the 80s or even modern, like, Asian guys were never meant to look good. And sadly, subconsciously, it affected my self-esteem in a lot of ways. And, because it's subconscious. You know, and just another example, I love Ken Jeong. I think he's one of the funniest comedic actors out there. Love him. But, you know, him in the Hangover movies did no favors for me or other Asian guys in terms of our masculinity or the way we were portrayed in media. So I bring up that thing with Asian guys, because with Asian girls, so it's a whole other story. With Asian girls in the media, they overtly sexualize them. They fetishize them. You know, they make them like an object for affection for typically like the white male lead to lust after him and have sex with, basically. So I mean, it's not to say that Asian women aren't beautiful. I mean, obviously Asian women are beautiful, but they tend to overly sexualize and fetishize them, while doing the complete opposite for Asian guys, you know, and I'm glad that Asian representation has definitely improved. I mean, obviously we have Crazy Rich Asians that came out last year, a film that I actually really like. I'm very thankful for Henry Golding, you know, I mean, that's a breakthrough role for him. He's really getting out there. He's just a handsome, tall, talented, and that British accent on top of his good looks representing us, I mean, shout out to Henry Golding, man. Like, you're really doing it the best for us. Honestly, if they're looking for other choices for James Bond, he'd be my choice. Biased, I know. But how cool would it be to see an Asian James Bond? That'd be awesome. And I think Asian representation is definitely improving from here on out. I mean, the industry is definitely more aware. And, you know, Marvel, they're going to have their first Asian-American superhero with Shang-Chi coming out soon. And I cannot wait for Shang-Chi. It's going to be directed by Destin Daniel Cretton, who directed Short Term 12 with Brie Larson, Captain Marvel, and also with Rami Malek and Lakeith Stanfield and Caitlin Dever. Oh man, that cast is insane in retrospect. All those people in that movie ended up becoming big stars. Two of them are Oscar winners, in fact. And, you know, like, I'm really excited for that film. But I do see Asian representation just expanding. There's this movie on Netflix right now called Always Be My Maybe that I haven't gotten a chance to see yet, but I'll definitely check it out at some point. And that's been pretty popular on the streaming. And Asian Americans or Asian actors and actresses in America are just getting more roles naturally, thankfully. Not just from Crazy Rich Asians. We had movies like Searching last year, which starred John Cho. Incredible performance by John Cho, by the way. And I think it's just going in a good place. And I'm optimistic of the future. There's definitely more to go. I wanted to give a shout out to Joshua Dela Cruz, who's going to be the new host of Blue's Clues. He is a Filipino American, and by the way, I grew up watching Blue's Clues, so it means a lot seeing someone who looks like me or someone who looks like a family member or friend of mine that I grew up around being the host of Blue's Clues. That would have done wonders for me if I were a little kid still watching that show. I can only imagine what it must mean for other Filipino kids who are going to be watching Blue's Clues when that comes out in November. So I'm glad with the direction Asian representation is going, and I hope to only help play a part in that as well in the near future as well. So, and Ariel also asks, since Hollywood is in a remake era, would you like to see an all-Asian cast remake? Sure, why not? You know, they're doing that with a lot of movies. Like, I know there's some movies out there that have, like, an all-black cast version of it, which I'm all for. So why not an all-Asian cast version of something out there? I can't think of any titles out there that would really showcase that, but that would be interesting. Next question comes from my friend Don on Instagram. Thank you, Don. If you ever had one, who would be your celebrity crush? Oh, I've had a lot of celebrity crushes growing up. You know, whether it was Emma Watson because of me loving Harry Potter, you know, I watched Disney Channel a lot as a kid, you know, and back in elementary school, I was a closeted High School Musical fanboy. So I had a huge crush on Vanessa Hudgens at the time. Still do, to a certain extent, you know. Austin Butler can tell me nothing. No offense. That's her boyfriend. But in terms of right now, I'd say my biggest celebrity crush right now is Lily James. She's an actress. I first saw her in Cinderella, and I just thought she was just incredibly talented and a really good actress, but also she's just a gorgeous, beautiful woman. I'm absolutely in love with her, basically. Like, like my crush on her is almost like middle school level. It's like ridiculous, you know. She's appeared in other films, you know, Baby Driver. She's beautiful in that film. I watched Mamma Mia 2 just because she was in it. She's the best part of that movie. But like, she's just a great actress. Looking forward to seeing her in Yesterday. She's in Yesterday, and she's just a really talented actress, and I hope to see more from her in the future. So yeah, I'd say she's definitely my biggest celebrity crush right now. So. Next question comes from Albert, my friend Albert, thank you. He asks, favorite artist working today, and what's your favorite thing to do in free time? I'm assuming he's asking this favorite artist as in favorite musician that's working today. There are a few that come to mind, you know. I'm a big fan of Frank Ocean, despite, you know, his big controversy. Kanye West, I still consider to be a creative genius. But I guess at the moment, I'll just say Tyler, the Creator. Following his career back during the Odd Future Wolfgang Kill Them All days, when his lyrics and his content was very inappropriate, in some cases homophobic in a lot of ways, which is ironic knowing what Tyler is now. I just, especially like from Flower Boy, which is an album I adored, and I even got to go see him in concert when he came touring for Flower Boy. He stopped by in Fresno. That was an insane concert. He released Igor, his newest album recently, and that album is my favorite album of the year so far. It's just a incredible, lovesick, original concept album that really reflects the feeling of what happens when it's a breakup album, essentially, and it's him reflecting on the breakup that he's having with this person. And there's so many songs in that album that just showcase the growth that Tyler made over the last few years. My favorite, the biggest song on that album is probably Earthquake with Playboi Carti with a really memorable verse. But my favorite song on that album is actually A Boy Is a Gun, which uses a sample from this song. I forget what it's called, but it's the same song that Kanye used on Bound 2, which was on the Yeezus album. And that the way he samples that on A Boy Is a Gun and just the hook, and just the way it feels, it reminds me of old school Kanye. Like, you could definitely feel Tyler's influences throughout this album, but in that one in particular, you could feel old school Kanye quite a lot. Sorry again. But yeah, I'd say right now, Tyler, the Creator, is my favorite musician working right now in terms of modern stuff. I'm gonna see him again in October. He's coming to Fresno again for his Igor tour. Can't wait to see that. And another album I recently listened to, Case Study 01 from Daniel Caesar. I love Daniel Caesar. He has a great voice. That's an album I definitely recommend. It's very lovesick too. I've been in a really weird lovesick album mood lately because it just reflects a lot of like my sensibilities when it comes to the kind of moody music I want to listen to. So there's that. Yeah. So yeah, Tyler, the Creator, is definitely my favorite musician. Modern musician right now that I listen to. And Albert also asks, favorite thing to do in your free time? Lately, since September, it's been working out. I go to the gym at least 3 to 4 times a week. I try to go, like, if I have free time and I have time to go to the gym, I'll just go to the gym and, you know, do some weight training or maybe some cardio. I actually just got back from a workout before recording this podcast. Since September, actually, I've consistently kept off 10 to 15 pounds off consistently because I had to make some lifestyle changes as a result of like a health scare I had around August last year, and looking at myself, just realizing I'm just not in good shape. So I decided to, instead of just irregularly go to the gym like I used to, I would try to commit to it more. I still have a few fitness goals then, but I'm pretty proud of the progress I've made. In fact, I'm just going to the gym these days just because I like the feeling I get out of it. I did a leg and core workout day today, and I just love the feeling I get, you know, working out in general. Besides working out, I just like going on walks, or just typically just going around. Like, let's say I go to like the local mall or something, just people watching and listening to music, or listening to podcasts, obviously. So I enjoy that quite a bit. That's some of the things I do in my free time. Of course, spending time with family, friends, traveling, all that kind of stuff. There's a lot that I love to do. So next question comes from Andrew. My friend Andrew goes by the name Culinary Mastermind on Instagram. Do you think DC can surpass Marvel in the near future? All the future Marvel movies look dry. I kind of referenced this earlier when Sandor asked that question. So Andrew, if you want to go back to that question, I answered it there. But yeah, I do think DC, I don't know necessarily surpass Marvel, but could offer something different that people won't realize, whoa, this is something really original, different, and it will stand out in a way that Marvel stands out differently. So that's what I'd say there. Next question comes from my friend Kyle Akia, and he asks, number one, which celebrity artist would you like to meet in the near future? And question two, why is Gamora? why is Gamora? But for the first question, and the only question I'm going to answer here, Kyle, which celebrity slash artist would you like to meet in the near future? Surprisingly enough, I've actually met a few through many events that I've attended. I've attended Comic-Con twice in the last 2 years. I'm going to be attending there again. I'm going to be covering for Heroic Hollywood, you know, and I'm really excited for that opportunity again. Comic-Con was a great opportunity. I've been around a lot of people. I've met Conan O'Brien. That was cool. He's really nice. You know, I've met the four main cast members of The Defenders. That was insane. I was dressed up like Matt Murdock in his lawyer attire, so meeting Charlie Cox was pretty cool. I went to go see Childish Gambino, Donald Glover, live in San Jose back in December, and I got front row seats. I was basically inches away from him, and although we didn't, like, talk or anything else, like, just being near him, because in a lot of ways, he might be my biggest creative inspiration right now, because he's somebody who does it all. He really is a Renaissance man, you know, and I'm so glad that he is basically on his way to becoming one of the biggest stars of his generation, if not the biggest star in the world right now. Like, he's about to be Simba in The Lion King. I'm still waiting on that next Gambino album, which he claims will be his last one. I hope it's not. So, in terms of artists I haven't met yet, Lin-Manuel Miranda. I would love to meet Lin-Manuel Miranda. Love Hamilton. Love Hamilton. That might be my favorite just work of art of the decade, maybe of all time, honestly, because Hamilton reflects, like, everything I love: music, performance, storytelling, history, great characters, lessons. It encompasses all of that into something really original, truly American, and something that really spoke to me when I first listened to that album, that cast recording. You know, it's a pity that I'll never see that original cast live, but I can't wait to see Hamilton live in the future, because it's going to be coming to Fresno very soon, like in the next year or two, so I'm looking forward to that. But Lin-Manuel Miranda, he's someone who inspires me. His drive, his talent, the way he writes, he's also an actor. So I guess if there's one person right now, it's probably Lin-Manuel Miranda that I'd like to meet. Next question comes from my friend Eliza Hope Cabido. Thank you. And she asks, why is Shrek such a good movie? Okay, and I'm not being ironic when I say this. Shrek is a great movie. And sure, there's a lot of memes that come with Shrek, but Shrek is certainly a product of its time, a product of the early 2000s. A lot of the jokes didn't age well in terms of timelessness, but Shrek and Shrek 2, I'd argue, both of those films, I really ignore Shrek 3 and Shrek 4. I mean, Shrek 4 is okay, but Shrek 3 is garbage. Shrek 1 and 2 are perfect representations of, like, millennial sense of humor. That, along with, like, SpongeBob SquarePants, like, those first three seasons of SpongeBob, perfectly encapsulate, like, the sense of humor of my generation, because we got all those jokes, and it's clever, it's funny, it's irreverent, it makes fun of the stuff that we loved growing up, like fairy tales and Disney movies, and it also tells an interesting message and story about, like, beauty and, you know, like, how love is not skin deep or whatever. I might be wrong when I said that, but yeah, Shrek is funny, it's smart, it's heartfelt, and beyond all the grossness that it might have on its surface, or its, you know, its edginess that it has for kids, it has a lot of clever humor that actually gets funnier once you get older. You know, like, there's a bunch of jokes when you're a kid you don't get, but as you get older, you realize, whoa, that was pushing it, especially for the early 2000s, you know. So Shrek is a great movie, and Shrek 2 is even better, I'd argue. So yeah, that's why I think Shrek is such a good movie. Next question comes from my friend Chris Noreen. How you doing, Chris? And he asks, who do you prefer and why, Joji or Post Malone? Huh, interesting question. I like Post Malone. I don't like all of his songs. Like, I'm not a big fan of the Stony album, but I do like Beer Bongs and Bentleys. Like, I like that album quite a bit. A lot of his singles, I think, are really fire and showcase a lot of his talent. I just like his hooks. You know, Rockstar, you know, Better Now. Or I love Stay, like his song Stay, which is just an acoustic song, which is interesting. It stands out amongst all the rest of the trap and rap influences on that album. Stay is just an acoustic ballad that Post sings, and I love that song. I've played that song on the guitar a few times, you know, and it's just a beautiful song. Sunflower, which he has with Swae Lee, which was on Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. I love that song. Such a catchy song. Still can't believe that song wasn't used in the end credits, but I like Post. But Joji means a lot to me, though, because, for one, Asian representation, but two, I remember Joji when he was Filthy Frank. And if you guys don't know Filthy Frank, be warned, his YouTube channel was very not safe for work, very inappropriate. Pink guy, he was known for Pink Guy. He started the Harlem Shake craze back in 2013. And to see his rise, kind of similar to when I saw Donald Glover rise in his career, seeing him change into a full-on like R&B musician is just so inspiring to me. And I love both of the big projects he's done. He's done In Tongues, which is an EP, and then he also released Ballads 1, which was his first studio album. And I think he's really showcasing a lot of growth in his career and in his music. He's maturing. Slow Dancing in the Dark is immaculate. An immaculate song, an immaculate music video. His performance vocally on that song is just remarkable. I love that song. It might have been my favorite song of 2018, actually. And he recently dropped this song called Sanctuary, which is just stunning. So I look forward to seeing where Joji grows in his career. And same thing for Post, too. I think Post is a really entertaining musician, but if I had to choose between the two, I'd say Joji. Next question comes from Jorge, a regular guest on the podcast. How are you, Jorge? He asks, where is the beef? I don't know. In the fridge, maybe? Love you, Jorge. But yeah, I guess that's where the beef is. Next question comes from Camille. And she asks, what do you think about the castings of Yesterday? Funny enough, I haven't seen Yesterday yet. I will see it soon. I intend to see it soon. But Himesh Patel is a newcomer. He's the lead of that movie. And I've heard his singing a little bit, samples of it, like his cover of Yesterday, the song from the Beatles. I think he has a good voice, and I hope he does well in that movie. I've already went on about Lily James. So there's that. Who else is in that movie? Kate McKinnon's in that movie. I like Kate McKinnon. I think she's funny. Ed Sheeran's in that movie, funny enough. And I actually saw Ed Sheeran live with my family last year. I mean, Ed Sheeran, he's a very popular radio pop musician, rock musician or whatever. I still think he's talented. I actually like Ed Sheeran a lot. There's some of his songs that I actually really enjoy. So I'm curious to see how he plays into that role in that movie, playing himself. But that's as far as I can go when it comes to Yesterday. I'm actually about to see that soon. So that's where I'm at when it comes to Yesterday and all. And there's one more question that I got here. Actually, two more questions, and they're from Valerie, Valerian Rhapsody on Instagram. Thank you, Valerie. First question is, with The Lion King coming out, how are you feeling about Disney's recent rush to revamp the classics and the downturn in quality, i.e. lazy animation with expressionless lions? So I briefly discussed, or actually really discussed, live-action Disney remakes with my friend John Maffio in the Aladdin podcast. I actually liked Aladdin more than I thought I would, given the problem with marketing. But it's funny, because I think I do agree that there's not that impressive expressions when it comes to using realistic animation with, like, the lions. I could see that, you know, so that's definitely a concern, because animation lets you do stuff you just can't do with live action effects. So the expressions, like, there was a side-by-side comparison, like the Hakuna Matata sequence in the original Lion King. You see, like, young Simba, Timon, and Pumbaa, like, they're moving their heads around, dancing and smiling, and you see the transition of Simba growing into an adult. And then in the live action version, you see the same thing, but it's just those three animals in realistic fashion, just walking, and they're not expressing themselves or anything else, which is kind of underwhelming. I'm not gonna lie, though, I'm still curious to see The Lion King, just because I love The Lion King growing up. It's my favorite traditionally animated Disney film, and grew up watching The Lion King, loved it. You know, I mean, I brought up Donald Glover, so I'm excited to see him, or hear him and Beyonce's rendition of Can You Feel the Love Tonight in its entirety. Because you heard a snippet of it, like, in one of the TV spots, and I just couldn't resist it. So, Disney, definitely, they're really trying to emphasize the whole live-action adaptation of their animated classics a lot lately, which is a bit frustrating, because they're trying to play into our nostalgia, because it's guaranteed money. I mean, Mulan comes out next year, which I'm excited to see still, partially because of Asian representation, but also, Apparently, they're trying to make it a lot different compared to its original animated counterpart, which reportedly means that they're not going to be using some of the classic songs like Reflection or I'll Make a Man Out of You, which is a little disappointing, but it is what it is, you know. So I'm on the whole take it or leave it camp when it comes to Disney live action remakes. There are some that I enjoy more than others, but then there are those ones like Beauty and the Beast, which just don't hold up well at all. I'm not a big fan of that one. But, you know, so there's that when it comes to Disney live action remakes. And the last question here is actually going to be a bit of a can of worms. Valerie asks, give us your take on the pros and cons of cancel culture in media. Okay. There is a lot to say here when it comes to cancel culture, because cancel culture is a big topic right now in pop culture. I mean, in popular cases, it's when something arises in, like, social media. Let's say, like, a perfect example was last year with James Gunn. James Gunn had a lot of very inappropriate jokes and tweets that resurfaced because this basically alt-right white supremacist brought them up because he didn't like James Gunn, because James Gunn is a very liberal person, not a big fan of Donald Trump. Sorry to get political for a moment, but surprise, surprise, someone from Hollywood is not a fan of Trump. Okay, whatever. But then this guy brought up those tweets, and then Disney caved and just decided to fire James Gunn, which got a lot of people mad. They tried to cancel James Gunn that way, but a lot of people came to his support. And thankfully, they reinstated him because they realized those were past mistakes, and James Gunn has improved himself as a person. That being said, there are also situations that are very touchy with cancel culture, where it might be warranted. So obviously in 2017, we had this whole thing that began with the Weinstein effect. And we all know about what happened with Harvey Weinstein. But then that led to things like Kevin Spacey revelations or Louis C.K. and a lot of other prominent men in the media like Matt Lauer or others as a result of like sexual misconduct or sexual assault, you know, which is inexcusable. But there are cases where, like Kevin Spacey's case or like Bill Cosby's case, for example, where I think cancellation is necessary, you know, as a result. Like, Kevin Spacey is not going to be working again, to say the least, and neither is Bill Cosby, you know? So I'm not opposed to them not working ever again in this industry. I mean, they've abused their power long enough. Like, I don't have an issue with cancel culture in that lens. And recently, a lot of allegations against Max Landis, a screenwriter, came up, and those weren't pretty. So I'm not opposed to, like, not seeing him in the limelight anymore as a result. I mean, he was already obnoxious, but hearing that just didn't help. But when it comes to cancel culture, when it comes to cons, it's when people make little mistakes, you know, and people come after you for making a mistake. I mean, social media, there's a big mob out there that is just perpetually offended and outraged, and it's best just to try not to let every single thing from social media come into play, because by the end of the day, we're all humans, and we all make mistakes. We all say dumb things. I've said dumb things when I was in high school, and I've said dumb things recently that I shouldn't be, that is best for me not to say. I've made bad jokes in the past, you know, and there's certain things that you want to keep away from social media or from public eye, because in the age of social media and outrage, they're just going to get really mad at you. So, like, you'd be lying if you didn't have certain thoughts in your head that if you said them out loud, everybody would be outraged. Everybody has had thoughts in their head, maybe even presently, that if they said them out loud, you could easily get canceled. Like Lil Nas X just recently, they had this whole weird Twitter trend of him saying, oh, Lil Nas X is canceled, or whatever, because of like old tweets or something when he was young. I didn't look really full into it, but you know, something along those lines. I think cancel culture has its pros and cons, as Valerie asked. Like, in the cases for people like Harvey Weinstein or Kevin Spacey, it's necessary and important to address those issues. But in the cases of something like what I brought up with like Lil Nas X or James Gunn or other situations with the age of outrage and social media, I think it's necessary that we try to find the right line in which whether or not something is worth canceling, quote-unquote, or not canceling. So it's definitely a really slim tightrope to cross, but I think we could definitely learn to improve upon what's best for our society, working together, and also trying to decipher what's right and what's wrong. You know, it's we're in a really weird polarized climate right now, and tensions are high, you know, as a result of just the climate that we're in. But I do have confidence that we can improve and have better patience when it comes to improving ourselves on an individual level as well as on a societal level. So those are my thoughts on cancel culture. Anyways, guys, this was about an hour discussion or Q&A that I had. Thank you all for sending in your questions. I really appreciate this. And once again, I just appreciate all of you who listen and support this podcast. I can't thank you enough. It is such a blessing to be able to express my love and thoughts on film, TV, and music with you guys. And I can't wait to do this for longer. I love doing this, and I just love talking with guests, especially. I'm still learning, and I'm still improving in terms of my content creation. I still have plans for even more stuff beyond podcasts, but I'm glad that this podcast has definitely helped me out and inspired me to do more content creation. So if you want to follow me on social media, you could actually go on Facebook, search Blank Green Canvas with Noah Villaverde. You'll find my page there. You could like that page and follow me up there. You could also follow me on Instagram and Twitter. The handle for both of them is Noah, N-O-A-H, underscore, Villaverde. That's V-I-L-L-A-V-E-R-D-E. So you can follow me on social media there. And with that being said, I am Noah Villaverde, host of the Blank Green Canvas podcast. And tune in again next week, where me and my friend Armando and another to-be-determined guest will discuss Spider-Man Far From Home and the cinematic history of Spider-Man. So, I'm Noah, and thank you for listening.